Hello, my name is Michael Albert, and I am the host of the podcast that's titled Revolution Z. This is our 118th episode, and it is based on an interview during which Justin Potter queried me about a novel I wrote a bit over 3 years ago. The interview took place shortly after the book, which was titled RPS 2044, became available on Amazon, and it was about that book and about writing more generally. I bring the exchange up to date in what follows at the end of the episode. Next week, Yanis Varoufakis will be our guest, and among other things, I will talk with him about a new novel he has recently written, which is still to arrive in the U.S. So this exchange with Justin Potter seemed like an interesting warm-up and juxtaposition, because the two novels have quite a bit in common, and the novels, and likely also our motives, have much in common. So, Justin Potter first asked, "You recently completed an unusual book, RPS 2044. Can you first tell us what it is?" I answered, "I think the publishing industry would call it an alternative history novel. I think maybe they call them mockumentaries." In it, Miguel Guevara, a journalist from a time-shifted version of the United States, interviews 18 participants in Revolutionary Participatory Society, or RPS, the organization and movement successfully transforming his society, which is just our society in the future. Guevara merges his interviewees' answers into 30 chapters recounting and assessing their experiences. In Guevara's time, his work constitutes an oral history. Conveyed to our time, it presents a possible future for us to consider. It is a kind of ploy, I suppose, to permit including the substance that I wanted to convey. Varoufakis, we'll see next week, does something very similar. Potter next asked, "You have written many books, but never fiction. Kathy Kelly called RPS 2044 a fictional leap into the future, where survival is enabled and sanity prevails, and a gamble on literature in the form of meaningful fiction to help readers puzzle through crucial ethical questions. Why did you make this gamble on literature?" asks Potter. I answer, first, Kathy was very kind, and so far, I think the gamble hasn't really gone my way, or more to the point, the book's way. And I think literature is overly kind of Kathy as well. But as you say, I have written often, though never fiction. I had another book then just out called Practical Utopia from PM Press, which also highlights concepts, vision, and strategy, though in a nonfiction mode. So why did I not stop with that? Why did I leap off the ledge to try fiction? I have long thought a novel could better convey the personal dimensions of social change, and perhaps better aid it than the writing I was doing. But I knew a novel required skill at developing plot and characters. I thought Aaron Dottie Roy, Barbara Ehrenreich, or more obviously, Kim Stanley Robinson could write like that, but certainly not me. So my writing in oral history was a step off the ledge, but a lower ledge, a bit of a compromise. You see, it reads like fact. I know interviews. The protagonist is the Revolutionary Participatory Socialist Movement, not an individual. That way, the writing was less daunting. I could just channel the views of the many folks involved. And indeed, I did type, yes, but it felt like I was transcribing Miguel and his interviewees, not writing my own words. Potter continued, "John Pilger says of RPS 2044, Mike Albert is attempting here something I wouldn't dare, a description of a revolution in the future based on the mayhem of today. Aldous Huxley and George Orwell did something similar and provided us with ways of measuring our regression. In an era when the dominant propaganda attempts to convince us we are living in an eternal present," quote from Time magazine, "this original and wonderfully ambitious project feels like a welcome antidote." And Potter continued, "If Pilger wouldn't dare attempt it, did you feel any trepidation before attempting it?" "Sure I did," I answer, "and perhaps I should have listened to my fear. Pilger is a more talented writer than I, and he wouldn't try it, nor would lots of others. So that left me, especially if I wanted the particular vision I favored to be front and center. For years, I had wanted a novel to exist that would be built around this perspective, but I never even thought about myself trying to do one. That was more than trepidation. I knew I would bollocks it. But having Miguel ask questions and having the interviewees answer from their diverse backgrounds and situations, that seemed a much simpler literary task, so I decided to try it. Even then, I knew it was not going to be brilliant writing. I just hoped it would gain an audience and have merit as worthy thoughts." I think Pilger may have also meant that he wouldn't try to describe possible future events at all. And I wouldn't either, at least as prediction or as blueprint. But as one path that might broadly occur for us and that did occur for hypothetical others, why not? If we can't envision that, albeit roughly and flexibly, however risky it may seem, how do we have the wherewithal to intelligently fight to win fundamental change? But even so, the interviewees are very careful and very forthright about their history being theirs and our future being up to us. Potter went on. Florian Zollmann comments that, quote, much progressive writing aims to expose the machinations and effects of power politics. Far too few books reveal realistic alternatives to the societal status quo. Even fewer works highlight sensible political strategies to reach a better world. Michael Albert's new book, RPS 2044, perfectly fuses visionary and strategic thinking for political activism. Guided by a sophisticated vision of a participatory society, RPS 2044 provides a multitude of personal and collective practical examples that can be emulated by people and movements during their day-to-day struggles for a better world. RPS 2044 is a must-read for anyone concerned with the current trajectory of society and how to change it. Potter continues, does Zollmann capture what you were trying to do? I answer yes. Zollmann certainly captured my intentions. I can only hope his kind assessment is warranted. Zollmann is right that there are way too few books, articles, talks, or films about realistic, positive alternatives. And like him, I can imagine folks emulating elements of the interviewee's future. And I can also see people adapting, refining, or transcending elements of it, of course. So is the book a must-read for anyone concerned to change society, as Zollmann says? We'll see. But I think we can confidently say that addressing positive possibilities to better win them is a must-do. Potter next asked, RPS 2044 is pretty long, at a time when articles are getting tweet-like and books are getting article-like. Stephen Shalom says, its interviewees, quote, tell their personal stories, advocate their favored positions, respond to their critics, and describe their fears and feelings. He continues, they discuss income in a just society, relating to lesser evil candidates, the pros and cons of markets, the role of violence in social change, connecting race, gender, and class agendas, overcoming sectarianism, generating mutual aid, building lasting organization, conducting effective buyouts, strikes, and occupations, planting seeds of the future, and much more, always via an engaging fictional emotive format. And Potter continued, how did you choose what to include? Are there elements in the book that could happen or not happen, as opposed to everything in the book being central to a good future? Shalom's list is representative, I answer, and it will sound strange, I know, but I didn't choose what to include. I decided who would ask the questions and who would answer them, and their background. But once that was done, Guevara and the interviewees were in charge. The 20 of them didn't collude with each other about topics, and I didn't look over their output and decide we need more of this or less of that. Asked a question, each interviewee answered, unaware of the answers others gave, as would be true for any real oral history. So the book includes what they said to Guevara, given their backgrounds and priorities. For myself, reading it, I think the key point for all the interviewees wasn't covering some comprehensive list of issues, but covering particular issues that allowed them to tease out the lessons they wanted to convey. Since I can imagine doubts about this channeling stuff, to further make the point about channeling, suppose you were to read Silence of the Lambs. Hannibal Lecter's words and deeds are his, not Thomas Harris's, the author's, and all ways that matter. The same goes in this case. Albeit, I overwhelmingly like and respect the characters rather than seeing them as pathologically deviant. Still, their words are theirs. On the other part of your question, the interviewees indicate what they deem central to winning a good future. For example, prioritizing all sides of social life and winning various pivotal economic, political, cultural, and kinship changes. Overcoming sectarianism, attaining mutual aid, and fulfilling key organizational aims. Avoiding electoral cul-de-sacs while using and winning elections. Overcoming reformism while winning reforms. Avoiding violence while mastering militant, multi-tactical approaches. But the detailed events, campaigns, struggles, discussions, and debates, and they recount many, are of course contingent. They appear because they occurred in the interviewee's experiences, but they certainly aren't mandatory even for winning the same goals the interviewees won. Porter continued. Also commenting on the book, Noam Chomsky said, "More than anyone I know, Mike Albert has emphasized the need to relate long-term vision to devising practical strategies for today. This imaginative oral history from the future is a provocative and most welcome contribution to this urgent and ever-present task." Bill Fletcher, in turn, called the book the most unusual and intriguing combination of prophecy, manifesto, and movement-building manual that I have ever encountered. "I have to ask again," says Porter, "are you in fact predicting the future, pleading for a particular future, or just trying to write an engaging novel with some political impact?" And I answer, RPS 2044 is not predicting, but it certainly wants to engage. The message was the point, not being an engaging novel. I probably should have given some more attention to the latter in hopes of getting some audience. Its interviewees present key aspects of a better future and lessons about winning, but their aim is to inspire folks to take seriously future possibilities and to develop their own priorities. Porter goes on, Cynthia Peters says your characters, quote, share the strategies that brought about victories, the breakthroughs in healing the divides that kept people apart, and the discipline and commitment that was necessary to survive tumultuous but exciting times. She adds that in current times we know a lot about what's wrong, and we have access to reasonably effective short-term tactics, but long-term strategy and vision are largely missing from our movements. With RPS 2044, we get a taste of what it could look like, a large-scale, radical overturning of current systems, which then puts in place new systems based on solidarity, diversity, and equity. This work fills a huge gap in our social movement literature. Milan Rai adds that RPS 2044 is a generous offering of well-grounded hope for desperate times. I can't imagine any point on the political spectrum that won't benefit from engaging with and arguing over RPS 2044. Porter next asks, so who do you hope will read it? And who do you think will read it? And, to update, I will make believe below, he also asked, who has read it? I answer, I think Peters identifies my priority reason for writing fiction, to better convey the feelings, sympathies, and personal attitudes that can form and sustain winning movements. Her comment highlights an effect I hoped for. I also hope that a wide range of people will read RPS 2044. For example, people who supported Sanders, but also anarchist revolutionaries who were critical of him, feminists, gay activists, and also Black Lives Matter advocates and activists, local grassroots organizers and also trade unionists, Green Party members, environmental justice organizers, and climate activists and supporters, TSA members, and also left liberals seeking more than their party offers, those frightened of Trump, and yes, those who voted for Trump, because their communities are collapsing, their health is suffering, and their incomes are plummeting. So like where I urged, I of course hope people all across the spectrum will read the book. I can even think of specific individuals outside the usual vocal readership of radical books it would be great to hear from about it. Enlisting some of those will reveal just how wide my hope spreads. For example, the book talks a lot about electoral politics and related campaigns, so how about Sanders, AOC, and Stein reading it? Their reactions would certainly be instructive. It includes a Hollywood star in a pivotal role, and has much discussion of related Hollywood activism. So how about Danny Glover, Susan Sarandon, Matt Damon, and Ben Affleck reading it? Sports-related activism plays a role, too. So how about Colin Kaepernick reading it, LeBron James, Serena Williams, or even Tom Brady? I'll read Brady's Get Fit book if he'll read this Win a Better World book. Dylan and Springsteen are in the playlist. How about them? Of course, the main audience is not those types, but regular types. Workers, students, activists. And I suspect the above will sound outrageously unrealistic. But why? If I or anyone really thinks RPS 2044 is a must-read for anyone concerned about society, why doesn't that imply wanting lots of diverse readers? Why couldn't anyone concerned about society include even the people I mentioned, as well as the constituencies mentioned? We who devote ourselves to social change often presuppose our own failure. We set our sights not on the prize, but on not being embarrassed. We set our bar of accomplishment so low it is barely off the ground. A great hockey player, Wayne Gretzky, arguably the greatest hockey player of all times, said you miss 100% of the shots you never take. I make plenty of mistakes, we all do, but I avoid trying to achieve so little that I can't possibly fall short. Saying what is wrong with Trump, racism, sexism, or capitalism is important, but how often should we do that to the same people who already agree and in the same ways? Saying what can come next and how to get it, isn't that also important? And isn't it a task far less undertaken and therefore needing far more attention? But you also ask who I actually think will read the book, not just who I hope will read it, and I think that depends. If RPS 2044, I answered back then, is a crummy read, then hopefully very few will read it at all, much less finish it. But if the various activist scholars you have so supportively quoted in your questions are right about the book's merits, then who reads it will depend on many variables outside the book's own merits. First and foremost, will people even hear about it to know it exists to be read? Second, will people write reviews and other commentary that indicates reading RPS 2044 won't be a lone endeavor with no follow-up, but that others will read too and exchanges will occur? With none of that, I think RPS 2044 will have at most a few thousand readers, and perhaps not even that. On the other hand, with lots of reviews and with reader discussion and postings establishing momentum, there could be 10,000, and perhaps even a few of tens of thousands, or more readers. For a book, as for organizing, momentum matters. And not taking shots guarantees you don't score. If RPS 2044 attracts only a few thousand readers, or less, they will likely all be folks who anticipate agreeing. If it has 10 or even tens of thousands of readers, they will include many from among the broader constituencies I mentioned earlier, like, say, Sanders supporters. But suppose some of the better-known individuals I mentioned relate to the book. Then, how many? The above answer applies to all books and even all media. I remember back when John Landau saw a very early Bruce Springsteen concert and wrote in a review, "I have seen the future of rock and roll, and his name is Bruce Springsteen." Without that gigantic push motivating other reviewers to also review him, maybe Bruce would have remained a small audience act. With the boost, Springsteen's visibility was huge, and his songs still shine on. So who knows? Maybe Sanders or Kaepernick or someone will write, "I have seen the future of the U.S., and its name is RPS." Is my hoping for that? Or that Danny Glover or Susan Sarandon will produce a film? Or that Damon and Affleck will write a new screenplay called Goodwill Winning? Over the top? Maybe. Maybe it is, but maybe not. They all could do it, couldn't they? So that's what I answered back when the book was first out. To bring it up to date, as best I can tell, almost no one read the book. There was no overt rejection or critique. There was nothing. It is interesting, isn't it? I have written over 20 books. This one had, I am pretty sure, the fewest readers by a considerable margin. It had no reviews that I can remember. Now, partly this was because it was also the only book I did that I had to self-publish, literally no organizational publisher, just me putting it on Amazon. And that was a bit instructive as well. The houses I sent it to that do novels said it was too much like nonfiction. The focus was ideas, not characters. That was true. The houses I sent it to that do nonfiction, including mine, said the reverse. It was too much a novel. I don't know whether that was so true. Now, I will be the first to admit I am no novelist, and it is not brilliant writing, but still, consider all those comments that Potter quoted. Potter next asked, "If people agree with those who have commented on the book and want to help promote it, what can they do?" I answered, and I suppose it still holds true, not just for this book, but for any book one thinks worthy. They can get it, read it, and if they think it's warranted, they can tell family or friends about it. They can use social media to increase the book's visibility. They can write a reader's review on Amazon. I am told those matter a lot. If so moved, they can write a review for The Nation, Truthout, ITT, Jacobin, or anywhere else, and send it to Z2 in case anywhere isn't receptive. They can urge periodicals or sites to address it. Potter next asked, "How should people use the website that accompanies the book? How would people use the video music playlist? And can people really question the book's interviewees receiving answers from the future, as it were?" And I answered, because, indeed, this was another unusual feature of the book. The site at RPS 2044.org is set up precisely to promote discussion, exploration, refinement, and improvement. It has forums, actually no longer, I think, but the site remains. And people can post blogs, too. It posts reviews, essays, and testimonials we hear about. And there is already some of that. The music playlist? I guess people should just enjoy it. And if so moved, suggest refinements, too. And yes, there is a section of the site that not only has brief biographies of the fictional interviewees, but also has a means to send any interviewee questions, which he or she will answer on the site. And I think there are about 20 questions and answers already there. And 3 years later, I think maybe there are the same number. Potter asked as well, what would you consider a successful outcome, a failed outcome? What do you think will determine which it turns out to be? I answer, imagine you give a talk and 10 people attend, or 500. In the first case, suppose your words and ideas so inspire and enlighten one of the 10 that she goes on to have incredible impact on hundreds, thousands, or even millions of other people. As you leave the talk, it could feel like it was a complete failure. The 9 others may even have hated your talk, and the one who benefited might have left without saying a word. So you exit wondering if you should ever speak in public again. I've had the experience. In the second case, suppose the audience of 500 loves what you say, not least because they already agree with it. In that case, suppose no one is changed by the experience, but afterwards they line up and praise and celebrate you. You may leave feeling elated and accomplished. Of course, in truth, unbeknownst to you, your seemingly failed talk was incredibly successful, and your seemingly successful talk accomplished nothing. If RPS 2044 inspires and edifies, if it provokes others to do better than I have done, if it contributes to building organization, campaigns, and movements that contribute to eventually winning a new society, then it is a success. If it does none of that, then it fails. Since having more readers doesn't guarantee, but certainly enhances prospects of success, I think reviews or other efforts to reach audience and pursue discussion and related activism will decide the outcome. Unless, of course, the various early testimonials are wrong, and the book is boring drivel. In that case, folks should ignore the book, but should try to find ways to help interject steadily more visionary and strategic insight, long-term orientation, and ambitious winning attitude into what was then current anti-Trump and other activism. But if the testimonials are right, and the book does have merit, we should try to get it out and around. And I thank you for helping with that by your questions. Well, no point saying the obvious. The book did not get out and around. It died a quick death, no lingering, though I suppose it could always breathe again if the right doctor administers aid. Finally, I am currently finishing a new book, nonfiction, to send off to Zero Books, literally in the next few days. Interestingly, I think it is better written than any I have done before, and perhaps that is a benefit of having tried fiction. I have no idea. I would say writers write to explain why I do it even when the odds against impact are great. But truth be told, I am not really a writer, not a podcaster, not a publisher, not a street fighter, nor an organizer either. I am not any of the various things I have done over the years. None of that is in my blood. None of it drives me, so to speak. In a wonderful world, I would have done none of that. Seeking change in our horrendous world, seeking a new world, is what moves me. The rest are means, not end. Same held for the characters in RPS 2044. And, all that said, this is Michael Albert signing off until next time for Revolution Z.